My name is Chris. I'm an alcoholic and a drug addict. God, it's amazing where I've gone in my life when I look at where I started, the journey I took, and where I am right now. For me, my journey started back in Boston. I live in Montreal right now, up in Canada. I'm an American. I grew up in Boston in a predominantly Irish neighborhood. I grew up in a neighborhood that I guess you could say was alcohol and drugs were all around, you know, a lot of bar rooms, a lot of drugs running through the neighborhood. Alcohol was certainly a big piece when I look back at my family of origin. I go back to my grandfather, my great grandfather. My grandfather died of alcoholism at a young age. He was 67. And I say young because 67. I'm 64, so 67's young. But and I knew nothing about really alcoholism and the family disease that it is, certainly starting out my life. But when I look back and I was able to understand it, make sense of it, and see how the tentacles of alcoholism affected not only myself, but my family members. Growing up in that, my family of origin, certainly my dad was a Green Beret. He was a military man. He certainly was a guy who expected discipline in the household. My dad was a drinker. My mom was a drinker. And I'll preface this by saying I grew up in, yes, a very loving home, but also there were times in that home that things were violent. And like I said, my dad was big on discipline, and he disciplined with his hands. I remember from the earliest, my earliest times growing up, some of the things that I witnessed as a young boy that, and not only witnessed, but was subject to from my dad that had certainly a profound effect on me, a negative effect that certainly helped me in ways that I realize now, but also hurt me in ways that I realize now. That violence at a young age that I experienced could be viewed today as childhood trauma. And being an alcoholic and a drug addict, when I look back and I grew up in that environment of drinking, you know, I when I was, I don't know, 4 or 5 years old, I remember seeing my uncle Emmett and my grandfather. They were brothers. They would sit in the kitchen and just drink all the time. You know, they'd be drinking in the morning, and it was just smoking cigarettes at the kitchen table. I'm like, what's going on here as a young kid? And then through my formative years growing up in that household, my father would go to work and come home 5 o'clock and start drinking right away. I like work hard. I come home, I blow off some steam. So I grew up in that environment of alcohol. A lot of family parties, functions, booze was a big thing. And there was always problems. I remember being a kid, my uncle Ed Conley, who would come over the house, and he was funny, and I loved him. He was a awesome. But I remember him sticking his finger in a Manhattan. Now, I know it was a Manhattan now, but, and he would put it in my lips as a kid. And I remember making funny faces and everybody be laughing. So I was kind of introduced to that environment at a young age. I didn't know a whole lot at that point, obviously. Growing up in those city streets I grew up in and trying to navigate your way through those streets in that neighborhood, it's tough enough to grow up, but growing up in that environment, let's say I know when I went out my front door, and again, my dad was physical with me, there was that violence in the household. And in order for me to live in that home, I had to put up with that. Otherwise, what are my choices at a young age? I got to run away. I didn't do that. But one thing I did do when I walked out the front door of my house and went out into those streets, I did not take shit from anybody. I had to take it at home, but when I went out the front door, that was the end of it. And that in turn got me into some trouble in my younger years. Trouble with the law, assault and batteries, ending up in jail. And every time when I look back, I ended up in jail or was in trouble. I was charged once again with assault and battery is a dangerous weapon, attempted murder charge in high school. I look back now and every incident I had had to do with alcohol. I was either, I was messed up on alcohol and or drugs. And every time I got in trouble, that was an underlying factor in that. One thing that I guess helped me, certainly in that time growing up when I looked at it, was I love sports. And one of the sports I absolutely fell in love with was ice hockey. And at the time, there was a guy named Bobby Orr in Boston. I certainly looked up to him and adored him, a great hockey player, one of the greatest of all time. And he had a profound effect on the kids, a lot of kids in the city I grew up in. And I wanted to be like Bobby Orr. So how am I going to do that? I have to go after that. And I did. I played street hockey as much as I could. I was on the ice as much as I could. I signed up to play hockey in my neighborhood, in the city league. And I was accountable when it came time to playing hockey. You know, I hung around my friend in the street corner, smoking pot, drinking, screwing around. But when it was time to play hockey, I never missed. I never missed practice. I never missed games. I was always accountable to my teammates. And in a lot of ways, I believe it saved me from probably spending a lot of time behind bars if I didn't have hockey. And I was fortunate during those times. I had a friend, a coach that happened to be a judge in Boston, and the judge, I guess he saw something in me that I didn't see in myself. And I'll tell you more on that as we go. But he was an awesome guy. He was arthritic. He was hunched over. He had bad arthritis. He had a family, big family, 8 children. But he always had time. He'd spend the whole day in court. And then he'd come down and he'd be on the ice for practice at night. 6 o'clock practice, 7 o'clock practice, whatever it was after being in court all day. And really did a lot of good for the younger kids in the neighborhood and try to give them some direction. He certainly had my ear, and he was an awesome man. My hockey career, again, as a young kid, I was passionate about it and was able to play high school hockey, and then I went on to college and played in college. I was fortunate enough while I was in college to get drafted by a team in the National Hockey League, the Montreal Canadiens. I found out in later years that the judge had a lot to do with that. He had a friend that played for the Canadiens over the years, and he made a request to him to have the organization just draft me. He had faith in me as a person and as a player. I end up playing for the Montreal Canadiens. I had a 13-year career in the National Hockey League. I had a wonderful career, won a championship, 1986 Stanley Cup. I fought a whole lot on the ice. And I say that because it goes back to my childhood, and that aggression streetwise, city tough personality that I carried onto the ice with me served me well in the game I played. And when I look at that game I played, we always had that mentality of work hard, play hard, and that's what we did, and that's what I did. And drinking back in that time, in the 80s when I played, was a big part of being a National Hockey League player. There's not many days during my career that I did not drink alcohol. Not just after games, after practice, at lunch, at night. When I look back, I can't believe the amount of alcohol I really drank during those 13 years. It was a lot. And I drank a lot to deal with some of the pressures and some of the pain that I incurred during those 13 years. And it certainly helped me get through a lot. My career ended in 1992. I was married. I had three children, a wonderful wife. And when I retired from hockey, I struggled a bit. You know, I did different jobs when I got out of hockey. And I never found that one thing that could ever replace the passion, the love, and the enjoyment that I had doing what I love to do the most. And when I found that I couldn't find that passion or that love for something else, I filled that big hole in my empty soul and stomach with alcohol. And eventually, drugs. The alcohol piece had always been there. The drug piece had never really been there. When I was a kid, I smoked pot and, you know, I dabbled with different things. But I never had that one drug that I was, I loved doing or was involved in until I retired from hockey. And I've had on my body, I've had 30 different surgeries, over 30. And from those surgeries, I was written prescriptions for pain medication. And I ended up being addicted to opiates, and Percocet was my beginning when it came to the drug scene. I quickly learned about the progression of the disease. I started certainly taking those pills that the doctor ordered, 2 every 4 hours, which quickly became 4 every 4 hours, then six every 4 hours, then eight. And it just took off to the point where I was doing massive amounts of Percocet a day just to get through the day. I didn't know what was going on with me. Every time I stopped trying to take them, I'd get violently ill, sick, joint pain. And I didn't understand this disease. I was withdrawing off that medication. And when you come off of that stuff, there is a lot of pain. I ended up kicking the Percocet by toughing it out and my own headstrong willpower, if you will, the first time. And I got away from it, and I ended up right around 94, I had another surgery. I retired in 92. 94, I had another surgery, and I got back on the pain medication. And I just couldn't get off. So I had that hole of no more hockey, no more doing what I love to do. And then I had this addiction I was starting to deal with, which I knew nothing about. I quickly went from Percocet to Oxycontin when that drug came out. And the sick part of that is I actually thought the Oxycontin would be sick, healthy for me. The Percocet being having aspirin or Tylenol in it, one of the other medications that's in it. And the Oxycontin was the pure synthetic form of the drug. So I figured, well, I'm taking the aspirin piece out. It won't be as bad on my stomach. And I got on the Oxycontin. I was so sick. I was so addicted. I went from taking one 80 milligram tablet a day to quickly 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And then eventually not taking them orally, I would snort those pills. So I got all 80 milligrams at once. And I was a full-blown drug addict and alcoholic. Life was going certainly in the wrong direction. I was heading downhill and heading downhill fast. Right around 2000, I had met a former teammate of mine who asked me how things were going. He had obviously heard some things. I said, everything's going good, you know, not bad. I'm in between jobs right now. I was just lying, telling the bullshit line, trying to not look too bad. And he said, listen, here's the deal. If you looking maybe to for some work, he said, I can put you in touch with this guy. He can maybe help you out. And he put me in touch with a guy named Dan Cronin. And Dan worked for the National Hockey League. And he was an interventionist, I know now, I didn't know at the time. And we met. And after meeting three times, he finally broke me down and made me realize that I needed help to get off this shit. And that was my first go at trying to get sober. That was back in 2000. I went to treatment center out in California, and I spent 3 months there. And I came back to Boston, and I started going to meetings. I did 90 and 90. And I was all in for about a year and a half. And then slowly I started getting away from the meetings. I went from going every day to a couple times a week to one a week to not going at all. And that lasted about 2.5 years. And I ended up going back to alcohol. Started with alcohol, and then eventually back to the pills. And then around 2009, I was in trouble once again. I was on my way to driving from Boston to Montreal to see a doctor. I was sick as a dog. And I ended up in a bad car accident. I was in a SUV driving, and I ended up flipping the vehicle, getting ejected from the vehicle, and almost killing myself. You would think that would get my attention, and it did. But I ended up being rushed to the hospital. I was waiting in the hospital to be seen by a doctor. I was unconscious. I woke up. I had all glass in my head. I was all cut up. And I waited in that emergency room. I was on a gurney waiting to be seen. And I got up off that stretcher, and I walked out and I got a cab and took it to Montreal. I was outside of Montreal about 35 miles. And I raced to get to that doctor. I had an appointment with that doctor at 3 p.m. And I tried to get there by 3:00. I walked out of that hospital, jumped in that cab, and I missed that doctor. And I was so sick, I was so drug sick, that I ended up just going right to a bar and drinking all night until the next morning when I could go see him. And I did, and I got my pills, and I felt okay. I was happy now. Man, when I think back of that, how much I did not think about anybody else but myself, how selfish I was at the time, how sick I was, man, I was in such a bad place. I did those pills, and a week later, I found myself on heroin. I had done all those Oxycontin. Actually, there were 90 of them there, and they were supposed to last me for a month, and they were gone in a week. And I was, again, now starting to withdraw from the opiates. And those pills were $80 a piece. I didn't have that kind of money to get more drugs. And I ended up calling somebody, and I ended up on heroin. And it was not long after that that I ended up in a hotel on the floor of the bathroom with a needle in my arm, waking up from, and I thank God, from an overdose. I had overdosed. I'll never forget the day I injected that into my arm, and I went right out. And I woke up. And I say this, I woke up 3.5 hours later, and I had been sitting on the toilet when I injected it, and I fell asleep right there with the needle in my arm. And when I woke up, I was in a panic, and I stood up right away, and my legs were numb, and I fell forward and hit my head in the wall, and knocked myself out once again. I woke up, I don't know how many hours later, but when I woke up with blood all over me, I was so beaten down, so sick. And I had kept that guy's phone number, Dan Cronin, in my wallet. And I ended up, after laying there praying to God to help me, again praying, because I was in the foxhole now, I was praying for him to help me. But I had to, and I realized, yes, God will move mountains for you, but you know, you got to do the work. You got to grab the shovel. And I ended up calling Dan Cronin and ended up the next day on a plane once again to go to treatment. And I did. I ended up in Oregon, treatment center, another 3 months. And I stayed in Oregon for quite a while. Started going to meetings, got a sponsor, doing the deal the way I was supposed to do it. And things were great. I got my life back. And, you know, when I look back how I got sick and understand that today, that first I got spiritually sick, then I got mentally sick, and then I got physically sick. And I understood that when they treat that disease, that they treat it in reverse. And I was able to go and get that help. I was treated physically first, then they worked on me mentally, and then they worked on the spiritual piece, which, you know, I grew up a Catholic. I certainly had faith during my life, but I got away from all that. I got away from God. I got away from religion. And I quickly understood that in order for me to get well and stay well, I had to change some things in my life. And basically, I had to change me. Not everybody else, me. And I certainly had a whole lot of help doing it, but I had to change my ways. No longer be that selfish person, all worried about me all the time, and what drug I can get or what drink I can get next. I had to start to focus on other things and become a better person all around. I grew up, even though I grew up in that family, my family of origin, that there was violence and some bad things happened. My mom and dad also taught me a lot of good things. They taught me about respect and care for other people. And I got away from all that the minute and the moment I started drinking and doing drugs. So, you know, my life certainly, the alcoholic drug addict, Chris, who was sick, and I'm not, again, I always felt that I had that good foundation that, yes, I picked up in my family, but getting away from that and living that the life of an alcoholic and a drug addict, you forget all that. And that all gets pushed aside. And it did with me. And in order for me to get well, I had to change those things. And I did. Like I said, I had that help. I started to pray to the God of my understanding every day, in the morning and at night. I got involved in AA and started working the steps. I got a sponsor. And I started doing this thing the way it was laid out. And it's funny, I started to drift once again from meetings. And then COVID happened. And I was fortunate enough to get involved in a meeting on Zoom down in Philadelphia with a group of guys that were on 7 a.m. every morning. And there's some such good sobriety. A lot of older guys in the meeting, guys that have been around 30, 35 years, 40 years, a couple of them. And I had felt myself drifting, and such a negative that COVID was in our lives, ended up being a positive in ways for me. And I'm sure some other people, Zoom meetings ended up being the best thing that happened to me, because I started to drift again. And yeah, I stayed in touch with my sponsor. I would talk to him, but I wasn't back in the middle of the boat, going to meetings and talking about, you know, my life and where I'm at and being accountable. You know, I remember my first time I went to treatment, my counselor, Ed, talked to me and, you know, I would only identify as a drug addict. And I remember the first, you know, week in there, and then the first 2 weeks, I would always say, yeah, I'm Chris, I'm a drug addict. Because I always thought when I get out of treatment that I could go back to drinking. I just couldn't do drugs anymore. And Ed, my counselor, said to me one day, Chris, how come you only identify as a drug addict? You know, don't you think you're an alcoholic? And I said, no. I said, I know I'm a drug addict, but I said, I could always drink, and I've always been okay drinking. And he said, listen, here's the deal. Do me a favor and do yourself a favor. I'm going to tell you, go back and really read this book. Try and identify. And he said, get how you get sober is to get honest with yourself, become open-minded, and become willing to do the work. And okay, that sounded great, but I had contempt for this, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't want to identify. I didn't want to think that I was an alcoholic. I didn't want to believe that. So I really didn't read the book. And then he grabbed me a week later, and he went to the back of the book and he opened the page. Went to 417 and told me to read it, the piece about acceptance. And then he told me to read the line from Herbert Spencer that said, and I love this line because this was me. This was me. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and cannot fail but keep a man in everlasting ignorance. And that principle is contempt prior to investigation. I had that contempt. And until I was ready to dive into that big book and dive into this program, I was going to struggle. And I always go back and think of Ed and the impact he had on my life to this day. He's the guy who really opened the door for me to come in and learn how to live a sober life from other alcoholics and drug addicts. You know, I look back over the course of my life, and I have so much today to be grateful for. I had a wonderful career. I did what I did for a living, what I love to do for a living. And I ended up in a really dark, miserable, lonely place. And it all had to do with the alcohol and the drug. Like I said, my family of origin, some of the things I learned, I was taught some very good things in that family of origin, but I didn't apply them. And I couldn't apply them because I was fucked up most of the time. And I ended up getting divorced back in 2005 because of this disease and the way I was living my life. I am grateful today that I have my children in my life, my grandchildren. I have a good relationship with my ex-wife. I have a woman in my life today who is a sober woman who has been so supportive of me. And I understand today how to have a relationship where there's a normal relationship where you're able to work together, you're a team. My best friends were always guys. My best friend was a guy, is a guy. But my best friend today is a woman. And I'm able to share and talk about things with her that I would never talk to women before about. And for me, the progress I made in my relationship, dealing with the anger issues, dealing with the, all those old, sick ways, the way I was living my life, I've changed all that and I've had help doing it. And to be in a relationship, a loving, caring relationship today where I put somebody else ahead of me just makes life so much better. I try and do this every day, although I'm not successful every day. I try and help another person in some way every day of my life without getting caught. Some days I'm successful, some days I'm not, but not for lack of trying. And I look at what this disease has certainly done to my life, and being the family disease that it is, being the transgenerational disease that it is. And I look how it's affected not only myself, my sister, who's a full-blown alcoholic, has wet brain. She's only a couple of years older than me, needs a walker. My youngest daughter, who has struggled with drugs and alcohol. And I remember back when I was married, my wife saying to me, you know, it's probably not a good thing to be drinking every night at home. And I'm, nah, it's no big deal. I grew up that way, you know. And all the time not knowing that my three children were looking at their mom and dad as one, a model for a relationship, and also a model of how you live your life. And boy, if I had to do over now, I only wish I had learned or understood this design for living that I found in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 steps. They've certainly had such an impact on my life. And today I'm happier than I've ever been. And I, like I said, I've had a pretty good life. I had a great life, great career. And I certainly went to the depths of my addiction, alcoholism. But today, and I lost everything. I lost everything. I had to start my life all over again from a financial standpoint, professional standpoint. When I got out of treatment the last time, I had a borrowed vehicle. I had a suitcase with my clothes in it. And I had about $400 cash in my pocket. And that was back in 2011. And I came back to Montreal where I played hockey, and I was trying to create an opportunity for myself. And I had some interest in doing some radio work over the years, and I had done some. And I moved back here. I lived in a condominium for about 6 months that a friend of mine let me use. And I slowly but surely chipped away and tried to get my life back together again, keeping sobriety in the forefront. I did do that. I went from that condominium in that borrowed vehicle to renting a home at first, buying my own vehicle, and then eventually, after renting for about 5 years and getting a job in the radio business, I did a sports radio show every day for 3 hours a day, and did a lot of motivational speaking around Quebec and Canada, Ontario, Nova Scotia. I was able to put enough money together to buy my own home and get my life going again. And it certainly was a difficult task to do that, but what was I gonna do? I had survived my whole life. I felt like I was in survival mode a lot of the time. And that when I moved back here, I wanted to start living life again. And I did. I was able to get my life back in order and live a good, healthy, caring life. Not always just worrying about Chris. Being able to have an impact in the excuse me. Having an impact in the community that I live in. Did a lot of work in the community, speaking to kids. And every Christmas going to the Children's Hospital and the Shriners Hospital, purchasing gifts, getting donations to be able to help the less fortunate. I'm always trying to help some cause or another cause today, not just worried about Chris all the time. And when I think about it, and I think about the work of God, and God living through other people, the God of my understanding, that I try and often, and I don't always do it, but I often, when I'm faced with something, I try and think of what he would do in a situation like that, not what Chris wants to do. And I've certainly, it's taken me some time to understand that and follow that on a daily basis. And yeah, I got my life back to where I want it. You know, I it's funny how I ended up on this meeting, and I wasn't sure what it was, to be honest with you. You know, I've done every morning I do an AA meeting, and like I said, out of Philadelphia, 7 a.m. here on the East Coast. And I just wasn't sure what I was getting into here today. And I felt like I was kind of caught in between a little bit. Is this AA? Is it something else? But anytime you can get a group of people together and you're able to talk about your life or problems in your life or good things in your life, and you're able to share some intimate details of your life where you may be able to help someone else, I can't help but to think that it's a good thing. So I don't know if you get anything out of what I said today, but today I'm sober, certainly by the grace of God. And I want to continue that. And I know I can only stay sober one day at a time. And I'm so grateful that I'm in the program I'm in, It's helped countless other people over the years, and it's pretty much a miracle the way this thing has worked out. Thanks for letting me share. I appreciate you asking me to come today. I hope you got something out of that.